Hi, this is Trevor Baker of Noble Cider in Asheville, North Carolina, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 120. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and a cider MC at this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking to a maker in North Carolina. That is a Trevor Baker of Noble Cider. There's going to be more with Trevor in just a moment. This podcast relies upon your support, whether you be a consumer of a cider or a commercial maker. So big shout out to Current Cider of Percy, Pennsylvania, who is opening up a tasting room in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia. They are working so hard there. Go, go, Current. And also, Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, Virginia. There's going to be a chat coming up with Big Fish soon. In fact, I have a bottle of Big Fish right on the table here. I'm probably going to be opening and sharing that with my friends who are coming by. I've mentioned before, Joby and William, we're going to be grafting Perry Pear this weekend. And I think this would be a really nice one to open. It's called the Church Hill Blush, and it's a raspberry cider. And of course, Big Fish always uses really great ingredients, you know, kind of like a traditional cidery. So check that out if you're out in Monterey, Virginia, or in the area. And also Ross on Wye, which is based in Ross on Wye in the UK, out in West Country. A fantastic representation of British cider. If you see that on the shelf, grab it. And a new member of the Cider Going Up campaign is NMR Associates. That's at nmr.com, doing analysis of that liquid gold we like to call cider. So check that out. Really great founder, John Edwards. He'll be on an upcoming podcast and could really help you fine-tune your cider knowledge, and is doing that at a really reasonable price. So big tip of the hat to NMR for doing that. And also to all the other patrons of Cider Chat. Really appreciate your support. If you could become a patron too, just go to Cider Chat Patreon and join today and help keep this podcast on the air. Gosh dang it all, I love that big band, horns and all that. Ooh, just gets me grooving. And actually today, while I am recording this, it is March 21st and it's spring. So that has to put a happy step in your walk, at least if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. If you are in the Southern Hemisphere, you have to have a happy step in your walk too, because you're picking up apples, you know, I don't know, picking apples, gearing up to make cider. So it's a good time of the year, March, for all those March babies out there and babies yet to be born. A couple other little news items around Ciderville. I want to give a good shout out to Ron and Kimberly Sansom of Spoke and Spy. They are based in Middletown, Connecticut. They have a tasting room that's open from 12 to 5 p.m. each week. And you might know Ron as Drinking Cider on social media. A great guy. I adore them both. And he's been a good, oh, I don't know what you might say, kind of a writer and a dude around town, and we know he's going to be making really good cider. So best of luck to them both. And I also want to remind you of the Ciderthon coming up in the United Kingdom, out in, again, West County, out not necessarily where Ross and Y is, I think a little bit further to the south. That's going to be April 29th. You could go to Cider Thon, not Thong. Although if you wear a thong during the cider thon, I'm sure folks would be, I don't know, either look the other way or stare. Go to ciderthon.com for more info and sign up. This is kind of where you're running and drinking cider at the same time, and who wouldn't love that? So when I come back, I want to tell you about a trip that's going to be taking place, part of the Totally Cider tours that I am launching. And hint, hint, it's taking place in Normandy, France. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back. Gosh dang it, on my pendulum, ooh, it just swings towards happiness, especially this time of year. You know, there's a lot of crap going on around the world and in life, but you got to just keep on getting up and going. There's just no doubt about that. Always something to worry about, so why spend your time there, right? Anyways, let's move on now to the Totally Cider Tour in Normandy. That is coming up on September 23rd through the 29th. So it's a Saturday to Saturday, the last week of September. We're going to do the Pays d'Auge region, which is the Route du Cider. The truth is, you see Route du Cider all over the western part of France, but the Pays d'Auge region is pretty well known for having a very compressed area. And we're also going to go south into the Domfront region, which is known for Peripair. So this includes 7 nights of lodging, breakfast every morning, lunch each day, some hot, some bagged. We're going to be cruising around the countryside and visiting select cideries, having some cheese tasting. There's going to be cider-themed dinners. We have a French translator coming along with us who is just the sweetest person in the world. There are some of the makers that I have already recorded a podcast episode with, and it has been published. So you could go to totallycider.com and see who that is. But I'll tell you right now, that is Domaine Dupont. So I had Jerome Dupont on. Agathe Lettier of Manoir d'April. I adore Agathe. I love her hop cider that she's doing as a collaboration with her son, who is a brewer. It's the first hop cider I ever had in France. We're going to have some upcoming episodes that I haven't released yet. Might be as early as next week, because some of these makers are extraordinary and they're really like off the beaten trail. You literally need like a topographical map to find them and kind of get the inside, like who should you go see kind of folk scene, which I did while I was there last September. So I'm really excited to bring that to you. And we're going to be having a cider dinner with Eric Bordelais. There'll be more on that. Eric Bordelais is going to be speaking to the group, and I'm really, really excited about that. If you want more info, if you want to sign up, people are already signing up for this trip. You do not want to miss it. It's September 23rd through the 29th in Normandy, France. Have fun. Tour, taste. This is a cider tour for everyone. Again, just contact me, Rhea@ciderchat.com, and get on the list to go to Normandy. Oh, there are so many great things out there in Ciderville, and one of them is this particular conversation I had with Trevor Baker. So we begin in the early morning. It was pre-CiderCon, kind of an open day where there were events happening, pre-conference events, and I had a 9 o'clock in the morning meeting with Trevor, which if you are up the night before enjoying cider and catching up with old friends and new, you know, know, it's kind of an early morning. So you're going to hear us beginning with a little bit of giggles and moving into the main nuts and bolts of this podcast episode, which is finding out about Noble Cider and what they're doing down in North Carolina. So without further ado, let's grab a glass and join this chat with Trevor Baker of Noble Cider in Asheville, North Carolina.
No, it's all good. We should probably go ahead. It's early in the morning, but I've refrained from having coffee so that we could do this.
Wow.
I'm really like, you know, giving you my all here.
Appreciate that. Refrain from coffee because it will impact your palate?
Indeed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I find, yeah, coffees and tea, anything with, especially coffee.
Yeah.
Really.
Wow,
affects
you are,
it.
That is.
I know.
That is deep. That is deep, man. I'll tell you, I'm refraining from coffee during CiderCon. And then.
especially after last evening from drinking in the hotel lobby there, you know?
Yeah. I want to welcome you to Cider Chat. Just to give folks a little idea of what we're doing, we are at CiderCon right now in Baltimore, having a chit-chat conversation with Trevor Baker from Noble Cider in Asheville, North Carolina. You are the first cider maker that I get to speak from your territory of North Carolina. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So yeah. Excellent.
Represent. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Asheville's a cool little miniature cosmos there in North Carolina. It's very much a hip town. We've got a large brewing industry there. All the craft brewers, I think we're up to like, I want to say there's probably like 40 or more now.
Wow, yeah.
So Asheville's known for beer, obviously, at this point. They've won kind of the Beer City USA a few years back, that kind of a thing. But we're here to talk about cider, so.
But I mean that does speak though to your consumers because you have
absolutely
palate going on. So that's something that a cider maker has to consider.
Adventurous craft drinkers, yep. So cider fits well, our ciders especially, we cater to that. We have an apple industry nearby as well in Henderson County, which is just south of us.
Henderson.
Mm-hmm. So Hendersonville is the little town seat there, but county seat. But I think we're seventh in the nation for apple production, statewide.
So just talking about that area of your region and the consumers. So
we have an amazing foodie scene, sort of the farm to table for such a small city. You know, there's maybe 80 or 90,000 that live in the city, but Metro is a little bit bigger, obviously. But we have an amazing food culture there. We have, obviously, a very kind of make-your-own-way kind of a culture. So you have your own if you have a job, bring it with you kind of a thing.
Right.
So we do have the Biltmore House, which is it's a large tourist industry. So
Biltmore House,
is a huge tourist draw. Everything you'd want for the amenities of life. You know, we've got great bakeries, great restaurants, great coffee shops.
Mm.
It's just the best.
That's everything. That's all I hear about Asheville. I have been through that area. But it's been a couple of years now, but it's always great music coming out of
great
there.
Great music.
So
yep.
An educated kind of palate.
Absolutely. We get a lot of people moving in from larger cities that want to escape New York and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
They're just tired of it, but they don't want to leave that culture, you know, behind. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, and you get to be outside. I mean, we're in the mountains,
mm-hmm.
so you've got a lot of people come in there for kayaking and mountain biking and hiking. I mean, you've got mm-hmm. the Appalachian Trail. I mean, really, it's a beautiful part of the world.
It's so. A little unique in North Carolina. North Carolina politically has gone through a web of
we've had our ups
what.
And downs.
Yeah, little ups and downs. And so Asheville and Durham has always been really inviting.
We're a little oasis out there in the mountains,
yeah.
Which if you've been keeping up with the politics, it's in the Supreme Court right now regarding the political jurisdictions.
Right.
So they basically tried to neutralize our liberal nature.
Well, watch out, because I don't know, what do you call your Ashevilletonians or something?
Or Ashevillians, we call them.
Ashevillians. Ooh, that is much better. That seems to do well.
We've been known, I think one of our state congressmen a few years back labeled us the cesspool of sin, which is terrible.
Oh,
terrible.
Oh, what?
I know, it's
for all that Asheville does for North Carolina.
I know. Oof. I know. We're like one of the number one tourist areas. We're like the gateway to the Blue Ridge Mountains right there.
Yeah.
You know? Great Smoky Park and all that. So.
Yeah. Okay,
it's cool.
Well,
they love us.
Water
they love
over
us anyway.
water off a duck's back.
Totally.
Yeah, moving on. And then there you are. So Noble Cider. Let's talk a little bit about the opening, what year mm-hmm. you folks went commercial, and a little bit of that backstory.
We made our first legitimate sale in 2013. It was like Memorial Day. It was our launch day, 2013. But before that, obviously, you're getting your ducks in a row. Paperwork. So Noble Cider came about because I got laid off from a job, which is the impetus for a lot of creativity.
It sure is.
I was fortunate enough, my wife and I, and we, what's next, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were cider drinkers. And at that point in 2012, there wasn't really much down our way on mm-hmm. the market.
Were you laid off from? What were you doing?
I had a job working for an online retailer. We sold natural care products and organic supplements.
Okay, yeah.
And you just sort of, if you're not part of the Amazon network,
it's
then
hard.
You're not going to make it. So
sorry.
It just kind of
got it
drifted away. But it was a great job. I loved
skill.
It.
Good skill to have coming into all the branding and knowing the internet and all that. You have to know that now.
Yeah, and I was probably the healthiest I've ever been. You're just like, oh, great, I'll take some ashwagandha and all kinds of, all these other cool herbs and supplements. But at any rate, it was after leaving that job, I had to think about what I was going to do, and I didn't want to move. And I could have stayed in a similar pattern, There's an organic supplement company that not too far away from in Brevard, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was toying around with trying to get a job with them. But I was like, we have all this fermentation going on, brewing. We've got all this craft revolution happening in this town. I mean, we've got craft hummus. We've got, there's everything under the sun. We've got craft coffee. I was like,
I love that craft hummus.
It's true. And then I was like, we have apples down here.
Yeah.
Less than a half hour away.
Right.
And it was just like, boop, just made sense. It's the right time to do it.
Perfect.
It's the right product for the market trends, and we had the ingredients, So I jumped on it.
That's a big leap. That's a big leap going into a business of that magnitude, because you have a tasting room.
Well, we didn't initially. So we started off, it was myself, my wife, and my business partner, Leif Stevens, who's mm-hmm. our production manager now, our head cider maker.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out, said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I jumped in to a class with Peter Mitchell.
Of course.
Over in
the UK?
It was on the West Coast. It was
Pacific Northwest.
Mount Vernon.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
A lot of people go to that course. Mm-hmm, yeah, good.
Mm-hmm. So I got in. Luckily, there was a cancellation in the class. It was full, and I was like, "Yeah, sign me up." So I like 2 weeks later, I'm in class, learning about commercial cider production, and come back, and I instantly start on paperwork. for the government. You know, the permits and whatnot. We had zero money. We had about 17 grand between all three of us to put towards this thing. Crazy.
which you know, when you scale up to what you actually need is like a little eye drop in the bucket.
I don't recommend doing it. But
classic.
It's how we started.
Good for you.
We took that. And
when did you actually start? Because you went commercial.
We started pressing our own fruit. So Leaf built us a homemade apple press, or a homemade rack and cloth press.
And around about what year was that?
This was 2012.
2012.
Yeah,
and then
the end of 2012 when the harvest season came through.
A year of licensing and then you were good to go?
Yeah, I started our licensing in September of 2012.
Wow, August, that's quick. September. I mean,
I was impressed too. You know,
there, you had some good luck.
I didn't have a lawyer to guide me through the process because I couldn't. Because that was 17 grand, right? I'm not paying for a lawyer.
Wow.
So I just did it on my own.
Wow.
And you know, my wife wrote. You know, she helped craft a really nice business plan.
Right. What's her name?
Joanna.
Joanna. Okay.
Yep.
Little shout out to Joanna.
Oh yeah.
Go
totally.
Joanna.
Totally. So she helped me write that business plan, and we took that 17 grand, a good business plan with a good business model, and we took it and leveraged that for an economic development loan from one of the private public partnerships in our area, and we borrowed like 40 grand from them, and so that's how we started. So. We started in...
Still a drop in a bucket,
it
though.
It is.
You know,
oh, yeah.
It's
Yeah, we were completely undercapitalized.
So a rack and cloth...
We didn't pay ourselves, you know.
Right. Or how many...
Yeah, it was like forever, dude.
Yeah, right.
Because you're doing all this work, but you don't have any... You're not actually selling anything because we were waiting. Basically, we juiced apples while we were waiting for our permits to happen. Right.
So you juiced and then...
Froze. Yeah.
And I mean, how many... Like chest freezers where you like knocking on the doors of your neighbors?
No, we did that's funny because we did have three chest freezers, but it clearly wasn't enough. No, we froze them in the IBC totes, the big square totes, essentially.
Yeah.
We bought like eight of those.
But where were you storing them?
There's the commercial freezer down in our area,
in
Henderson County, actually. And you pay by the pallet.
Wow.
Or by the tote per month.
Very forward thinking.
Well, you know, we knew it was going to happen. I mean, we had jumped in. I mean, and it wasn't that much to risk. I mean, 17 grand is a lot, obviously, but it was like, if we fall flat, we can recover.
You took this course with Peter Mitchell. Was Peter teaching the course?
Oh, yeah.
And had you been making cider prior to that?
Not really. No.
So that's
we were drinking,
swing on the trapeze.
Absolutely.
Like, here we go. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we literally jumped in.
Yeah.
All in, all the chips on the table. We were cider drinkers. Both Leaf and I were half English. So, like, my mom is from London. Okay. So, we had both been exposed to cider culture.
Well, that's important. I mean,
right.
would you agree? Because there's a lot of makers that come in and in that same kind of span of time, but they don't necessarily have the breadth of what cider is out there in the world.
Right.
And it can be very one-dimensional.
Especially here, if they only see what's happening in this country at that time.
Or one region of their country.
Right.
Of the U.S.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's helpful to have that bigger perspective of cider in the world.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the whole gluten-free... options out there, cider fit nicely into that, which my wife has grain allergies. So.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. So now I'm getting the hit on
the picture,
noble piece, and because you're ciders and you brought,
I brought four, some here.
Yeah, you have four ciders on the table, and they all have this kind of Brit, you know, kind of noble, like...
The name Noble,
the knights and...
Absolutely, yeah, just characters, basically.
Yeah.
We have our sell sheets here.
Okay,
so we have, you know, our cherry cider.
The village tart.
Right.
Nice labeling. So it gives you this kind of old world but modern twist, a fusion of the two, and the spice merchant.
Our chai cider. So those are our four lineups, right? That's our year-round lineup currently. Mm-hmm. We do a straight-ahead modern dry cider, which is our standard bearer. We do a fruit cider, which is the tart cherry.
Yeah, the tart cherry. Local tart. Cherries from...
actually, we get the Montmorency and the Balaton out of Michigan.
Okay. Yeah,
we don't have a whole lot of cherry production in our area.
Huge cherry state, Michigan. Yeah. That makes absolute sense.
Yeah. Well, really, I actually think there are some of the best cherries on the planet, personally.
Well, there you go.
So that's definitely for red tart cherries, they're absolutely the best.
Perfect.
We do a ginger cider, of course, and we juice our own ginger.
That's called the Golden Arrow.
Golden Arrow. Mm-hmm. And then our chai cider is the Spice Merchant, and we partner with a company local to us that's doing, you know, organic teas, and they make a chai blend for us. So we do
that seems let's talk about the standard beer too, which is a crisp dry. This is your flagship.
That's the one we just started making right out of the gate.
Yep. Okay.
Didn't even have a name at the time. We just started making a cider. And so we just use, in our area, the apples grown are primarily, you know, fresh eating apples. Mm-hmm. But we do get we do get some heirlooms mixed in there as well. So we have like Arkansas Black, which is a southern heirloom.
Yeah.
But we get Pink Ladies, we get Jonagolds, Jonathan's Gold. We do, you know, Goldens. It's basically a mix of everything that's kind of out there. Galas and Fujis are prevalent, Granny Smiths. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of working with the fruit that you have available to you.
Right.
And at the same time, kind of off topic, but I've started to plant trees that are not common to the area. So we're rediscovering some of the... some of the American heirlooms, like the Harrison, we're planting some of those, and the Wicks and Crab, we've got some of those in the ground. What else we got? Roxbury Russets, and even modern apples like the Gold Rush are great for cider making.
So that's kind of, you know, opening 2013. It's 2018 right now.
Yeah.
During this conversation.
We weren't planting back then, but we have started planting last year. So,
and what's your like acreage for your orchard?
We partner with an orchard because we know most of the orchards in the area there just from buying fruit, and we juice our own apples. So we basically
with that same rack and cloth.
No, we bought.
Well,
although we've juiced quite a few gallons on that thing, we probably all told probably did about, I don't know, between 12 and 15,000 gallons off of that thing, which is absurd.
Impressive, yeah.
Absurd.
Yeah.
But now we have a Good Nature squeeze box that we bought used. It's a big thing. It'll do 500 or 600 gallons an hour, somewhere there. But no, we didn't have that initially.
So is that what you've been doing, is bringing in apples from this region?
Yeah.
Henderson?
Hendersonville.
And
Henderson County.
And bringing them to your location?
Yep, and yes,
and,
so...
And pressing.
Absolutely.
Not we bringing just, in juice.
Well, certain times of the year you have to go back to juice, because we have limited cold storage options where we are, available to us directly. So, you know, right now I've probably got about, I don't know, maybe 600 bins of apples left. So I'll press through those, which will get me through, you know, a little while, but...
Did you say 600 bins?
Yeah. Which
that's not a small number. That's quite a bit of apples. I mean, are we looking at bins in terms of...
Yeah, like the 20 bushel bin,
okay,
the apple boxes,
yes.
Traditional wood. Yeah,
that's a good amount.
There's about that many left in my cooler right now. And we basically lease all of those options down there, so...
You're going through a lot of cider, Shepard. I mean,
annual production... I mean, we're still pretty... We're like a small, medium-sized company, I would say, like on the small end of the medium size.
Yeah.
So we're under 100,000 gallons a year.
Okay. But
we started with 2,000 gallons, though, to put it in perspective.
Of course, right. And you're going up. So would it be fair to say that you're a little mix of traditional and
absolutely
modern?
Absolutely. That's 100% correct, yes.
So these bottles that I see here are...
More modern.
Are all modern. They're the Well, like 4 to 6 week, and there's one bottle that I don't recognize there.
Yeah, that's one of our seasonals. That's our spring seasonal. It's a blueberry cider that we put with honey and rosemary. So, yeah, we like the full spectrum of the palate. We do traditional ciders as well. We've got some, we don't have access to the traditional fruit, like the bittersweets.
For ciders, that
classic
cider.
Yeah, so I wouldn't call it a true heritage or a true traditional, but we do, we still use some of those same techniques where we, you know, we'll do some bottle conditioning, cork and cage. You know, we'll let the fruit sweat and things of that nature. But for these, our more readily available ciders, it's more of a, you know, our standard bearer is a, it's just straight up dry. There's, it's just apples and yeast, you know.
And that's so, the crisp, dry, hard cider.
Yep.
Do you use that terminology, hard cider? That's pretty...
Hard cider.
Embedded in your branding. And
I mean, it's still down where we are. A lot of people think cider is juice.
Necessary. It's a necessary qualifier.
But in my mind, it's just cider. Like, Noble Cider is the name of our company.
Of course, because you're on the board of the United States Association of Cider Makers, so you're, you know, you have a different perspective than
But, you know, for consumer. Government reporting, there's a hard cider, you know, tax.
Right.
So you got to... play by the rules. And consumer education is always ongoing. Right? I mean, it's, to me, juice is juice. It's never cider, you know, but we still have that mindset, especially in the South, you know, where it's like, cider is like cloudy apple juice fresh off the farm. Right?
So how do you finish the sentence, cider is, when somebody walks in the door? Hey, what cider? What is this? I came in the cider bar. I don't know what this is. And
wow.
Not
so,
that they speak like that, but.
Yeah, no, well, they do sometimes.
Okay.
So I start out by saying, you know, like, I tell them straight up, you know, because they come in and like, so how do you brew this stuff? And I'm like, well, first of all, we don't. Cider is technically a wine. It's fermented fruit juice. That's the base. The base point of entry into understanding cider, I think.
And you have that.
But we market it like beer, obviously.
Right.
Or, you know, in packages that are more beer friendly or craft beer oriented.
Right. You're kind of, you're straddling in your branding. Because I think that's interesting for any cider makers listening out there in Ciderville right now, is that on Noble's website, you have the statement, we ferment, we don't brew.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a really clear statement. And you also straddle it in that you say it could be, it's basically a fruit wine, but it's also drunk like beer.
Correct.
So
it's typically carbonated.
You're educating in your website, which I think
absolutely.
Is really key.
Yeah.
You know, because folks go to that.
Well, I mean, we really want cider to be, it really is its own category and has been taxation-wise anyway. But I think if you ask any consumer on the street what is a cider carbonated, they're gonna be like, yeah, of course.
Right.
So we drift away from standard wines being still in the bottle with a simple cork in it, which we can do. We do make still ciders.
Right.
But I think it's best when it's carbonated or sparkling. So I mean, naturally, cider is straddling that line because it's a lower ABV. It kind of puts it down to where it's on tap along with your beers because it's in a similar price range and similar ABV structure and all of that. But consumers don't know how you make it. The standard consumer, they're not really even thinking about it, maybe. And so you have to always educate. And we use our tap room. Any chance we get, we are educating consumers in a good, you know, in a pleasant manner. Not like
you sit down right.
Not
here,
in a judgmental.
Man. I'm going to tell you about cider.
You should never be judgmental or negative about it. It's just like, here's how we do this.
Of course not,
you know,
right.
I mean, if you want people to really appreciate your craft and what you're doing.
Right. Well, you seem the least likely judgmental person around here, so I'm sure. Hey, I'm getting a little thirsty. Why don't we open whatever?
Let's start with our standard here.
Standard, and this has a bottle opener right there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So the standard on the label has, I don't know what you kind of call that guy, but he's a standard. Is that what a standard bearer is?
Yeah, standard bearer is the guy that's holding the flag.
Holding the flag, if you can imagine.
Up at the front of the
for
the
King Arthur's court, you know.
Or just anybody that's in, you know, at the front there, like, how did you get that job, you know?
I know, he's kind of looking at, like, how did I get up here?
That's kind of how
Give me
felt.
A cider.
That's kind of how we felt when we started the company, so
thank
it's
you.
Appropriate for...
thank you.
Take that glass over there.
So we have... in my glass right now, I'm going to just describe what I'm
sure.
seeing, and kind of, you know, sometimes the colors of the room really go off, but it's a very light amber, carbonated cider.
Yep. Sorry, these aren't extremely cold, but
that's okay.
Pulled them out of the.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers. Absolutely.
Best of luck.
Yeah.
And good health.
So this is just a dessert quality fruits, fermented. Fully dry.
Mm-hmm.
There's hardly any residual sugar left in this. Maybe a gram in a 12-ounce mm-hmm. serving. I think it's about 1.5 grams for a 12-ounce
mm-hmm.
serving.
Mm-hmm.
So very dry, straightforward. Right around 7%.
Yeah.
Six. You know, it fluctuates
yeah.
obviously with the fruit coming in, but anywhere usually always 6.7 to 6.9, 7% somewhere.
6.9. Are folks surprised by the ABV?
A lot of people are.
Yeah.
Especially with, because this isn't a 12-ounce bottle, and we do 4 packs on this one, they're used to seeing that kind of package reserved for like 4% ciders, 5% ciders, ciders that have been cut back, you know, to drop the ABV count on them, which we don't dilute anything
you
down.
You don't dilute.
Yeah.
But this is has a chapelization.
No, none.
Okay.
All right, we get fruit coming in.
Fruit, it's high enough so you don't need it. So you're stopping fermentation via filtration?
We do a little bit of back sweetening.
Okay.
So we do a little bit of juice sometimes on the back end, just
a
marginal amount.
Which brings out the apple.
Yeah, just
the aroma.
Obviously not much. I mean, it's, you know, it's got basically like 1 gram of sugar left over. So.
Yeah, and you have that actually.
On our
1.5 grams of sugar. In this 12-ounce bottle, which as a, I like to be an informed drinker when I'm going out, you know.
Yeah.
And I typically, if I arrive at a tasting room, I go for the highest ABV first.
Uh-huh.
If I'm going to be there, and then I work my way down as, you know, I'm kind of.
I usually go, yeah, but you also want to consider how much residual, for me, residual sugar.
Absolutely.
Because it'll wreck your palate as you go. Usually you want to go dry to sweet.
It could, yes, it could, yeah.
It can, yeah.
That's the way I do it. I just have found it for my
it's all good.
Out in the world.
No, it's fine. You know, if it, like you try, for instance, our Spice Merchant, which has probably more 7 or 8 grams residual sugar, which is still fairly dry in the commercial world of cider.
Mm-hmm.
When you know, absolutely.
And what's the ABV?
And that's
on
the highest sugar one that they make. ABV on that one's more 6, 6.5.
6.5.
Yeah.
So this is the lowest.
Sugar?
The standard beer.
Oh, absolutely,
right.
Yeah. We do
right
have other ciders,
with.
More traditional.
So it works, actually. 6.9%, your highest ABV. You start with a standard beer.
And then
so
you go down.
You're
Correct.
Serving flights at the tasting room.
Mm-hmm.
So you would do this standard beer, then onto maybe the...
Yeah, we
Golden
do.
Era,
absolutely,
perhaps.
Yep. And then the cherry, and
Which
then
the
chai.
Ginger. Yep.
So we do, and our flight is right now is a four.
Four flight, yeah.
Four to a flight,
four
so it works out great. But then we also have a great small batch and seasonal program. So we have 20 taps in our tap room. We do keep some beers because we're kind of a local hangout as well.
Okay.
Out where we are, we're kind of outside the city. So we keep 6 beers on all the time, and then the rest, you know, the rest are ciders, and we just keep our year rounds on.
Mm-hmm.
We do always have a seasonal going, and then tons of small batch stuff, which you start getting into what I call new American cider.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to your original point, we do a mix. So we do traditional. We also make mead sizers. Leaf is kind of... he's like the mastermind behind all of our small batch and cider making production. So I spend more time in the office these days. but yeah, so there's always like right now we've got a pineapple jalapeno cider on tap. We've got we do a lot with tea as well because we don't have the bittersweets.
It's So in our region. So you're using the stringency of the tea and
correct.
The tannin, yeah.
Tea is a great way to kind of, pull out some various things. We do an Earl Grey, which is hugely popular in the tap room.
What do you see as, like, sometimes the cider maker picks the flagship, such as your standard beer, the crisp dry, but what do you see kind of flying out? Are folks walking in and saying, oh, there's a pineapple jalapeno. I have to have that.
Absolutely.
So you are...
Consumers want the crazy, you know.
The newest thing on the block.
They want it regardless of whether that's what you want them...
That's what they want.
To go that path.
Yeah.
It's like you've got to do it all, in my opinion, as a company.
Right.
In our market, you kind of have to serve all needs. And so... mixing in, you know, doing straight. We do single varietals, you know, and we'll partition them off and bottle them over here and run them on taps on there, you know, and people love those too.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's marketing there. It's like, oh, it's a Pink Lady, you know,
well,
or
yeah,
honey, whatever.
Absolutely. So, I love single varietals. I mean, that tells me, you're doing well?
I've got some coming later today.
Oh,
so
great.
This interview, but I'll brush them off for you.
So you're doing wild ferment too.
We do pitched on these.
Not on these, but you also do.
We have done some wild fermentations.
Barrel aging.
We do some barrel aging.
Yeah.
It's hard to maintain a wild fermentation in a facility where we're using other yeasts. It's all in the air,
that's kind of your terroir, though. I mean, the terroir,
sure.
You know, and the yeast is primarily in the cider house, not necessarily on the apple. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
So
I mean, for us, it is.
There.
I mean, it's juicing, and you're picking up some of that. But yeah, barrel aging. We have a few barrels there.
Any tips on dealing with barrels?
We're learning, to be honest with you.
Yes.
We don't have a whole lot of experience, and that's actually one of the. Last year, I talked to Shay Comfort, who does the Yeast Whisperer guy, CiderCon here.
Yep, I had him on the podcast.
Yeah, and I was like, dude, what else you got? You know, what's another topic you can do? I feel like we're missing out on this barrel age thing. He's like, oh, I've got a whole presentation I can do on barrel aging and the differences in woods and things. And so he's doing it this year, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's called Oak.
Working with Oak,
but it doesn't say working with... barrels. So I was wondering.
It's more open-ended, so you can use spirals.
Yeah,
it's understanding how the wood will affect your cider.
Yeah.
I
would like to see a workshop like that at CiderCon. You know, cleaning barrels, storing the barrels.
Yes. Yeah.
And
maintaining them.
Maintaining the whole 9 yards.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I would like to continue to develop is finding people that have that expertise.
Yeah.
Because we don't, but we do it anyway, right?
Big interest in that.
There is a big interest in that. And I think it would be beneficial to the entire industry if we can develop some more classes along those lines.
Well, let's get a couple more things about Noble. Then I'd like to talk about the association.
Sure.
So there's a tasting
room.
On
our horizon, yeah.
Your tasting room is open how many days a week?
We're open Wednesday through Sunday. It's inside of our production facility.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about a 9,000 square foot production facility kind of on the outskirts of town. Nothing fancy. It's just a warehouse. But we do have a tap room there. Super cozy and family friendly.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You know, we're open from like 3 to 10.
You said that you're a little outside of the city, so how far?
We're in the city limits, but we're not downtown.
So how long of a drive, just for folks coming to town hearing this and want to come to
Noble? We're probably 3 or 4 miles from
quick little lift
the center of town.
Drive out there.
Yeah.
Over.
It's pretty easy to get out that way. It's just
a bus stop at all from downtown?
Yeah, there is actually a bus that runs on in there. Yep.
I do like that public transportation.
Which Asheville, we need, that's the one thing I wish we had.
A little bit more?
Yeah,
but you
more
have a bus
robust.
Stop. You
we
have
do.
A bus stop.
It's
so
true.
If you have a bus stop, you could get there.
Well, and actually, we're in July or August this year, we'll be breaking ground on our downtown spot. So I'm announcing that officially
Bingo.
Now.
Bingo!
It's not a production facility. We're opening up a downtown, a retail location, so a tap room. We'll be able to sell our products, obviously, to go. And then a restaurant.
Is that, you're breaking ground this summer?
It's a bill, yeah. Well, we're starting, it's okay. In the works now. We should be open. We should be open July or August.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yep. Well, stay tuned for that. I'll let listeners know.
Right in the heart of downtown Asheville.
Wow. Okay. That changes everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because then we'll be able to capture a lot more of the tourists that come in, you know, and locals too.
Yeah.
That don't live on our side of town. They want to go downtown.
People are definitely cruising into Asheville, kind of like
all
sanctuary.
The time.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
But we'll have
that's
a full opportunity there with food mm-hmm. pairings with my brother. He's been a chef for 25 years now. He's opened up.
What's his name?
Gavin Baker.
Gavin. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gavin.
So he's chefed all over the world, at some high-end places, like the Fat
Older
Duck.
Brother, younger
Older,
brother?
Older.
Older brother.
I'm the youngest of three.
Aww. So. Who's the other one?
Sean.
We don't want to leave Sean out.
No, you know? No. So Sean's listening. He lives in Phoenix with his family.
Nice. Love Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going out. He just moved out there a few months ago, so we're actually going out to visit in March. I've never been to Phoenix, so look forward to checking it out.
Superstition Mountains and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Really close, right outside of Phoenix. I could go on and on.
Grand Canyon's right up that way. Well, I want to go check that out,
Grand
too.
Grand Canyon's...
It's a drive.
Yeah, it's a drive. But you go to Superstition Mountains, like, in a half hour outside of Phoenix,
perfect.
And you're in, like, Apache Lake.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
I'm sure your brother knows about it. You should check it out.
Yeah, he's a hiker and an outdoor enthusiast,
yeah,
so...
Yeah. Are you? Are you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought you were,
camping, I own a canoe.
Yeah.
I don't get out on as much. But.
So I'm wondering, are you ever going to do like cans at all? Or
yes.
Bottles?
So we have discussed the can option. We don't have a canning line, mm-hmm. But there is a mobile canner. We've discussed, it's kind of in our product development for 2018. We've got a few things that we're going to be working on. Obviously, meads. Mm-hmm. We're going to, take them out of the tap room and start bottling those.
Okay.
Both high gravity mead and more session style.
Good.
We're working on obviously new flavors.
Where can I find your ciders?
So in Western North Carolina is our stronghold.
Okay.
We're in a lot of the groceries, the retail locate like the chain grocery stores. Mm-hmm. We're in. The Whole Foods and the Earth Fairs and the Ingles, Harris Teeter's, Target, believe it or not.
Wow, Target has cider.
Bringing the heat.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially in, the two in Asheville.
That made my day.
I know.
That's
I
like,
know. So now it's a one-stop
store?
Shop. True.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
right when you walk into the Target, the main Target in East Asheville there's... The big
good
wall when
tip,
you walk in is all
tip.
Alcohol. It's all
how
like
convenient.
It's all local alcohols.
Whoa.
Which we have a lot of.
You do. Wow.
Beers. I think we're the only local cider up there right now, but it's fantastic.
It is. Good for you.
And then the mom and pop places, your bottle shops, bars and restaurants have us on tap and in bottle as well. So we've just got a new distributor for the eastern part of the state, so we'll be able to carry through on the chain for the stores that carry outside of our current distributor territory. Mm-hmm. We just took a little bit of a foothold in upstate South Carolina. I have a distributor there now, and Northeast Georgia have a distributor there. And
all right, so you're moving out. A pretty short span of time. You're doing a lot.
Yeah.
So anything that you would have done differently looking back or you wish you, could have done?
I wish I understood more. Like, we understand how to make cider and the packaging elements, and I wish I understood distribution more, to be honest with you. It's it's not easy.
Right.
Finding distributors,
right.
Finding good partners in that world.
So that they'll get you on the shelf, they'll be out there promoting, they'll be doing the tastings. Because you could get really locked into a distributor and be kind of lost in the warehouse.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fortunately, our local, the person that services Asheville and mm-hmm. the region there is fantastic. They've been great for us. But once you're not local anymore.
You go into nationwide or something.
Out of your stronghold, you have to do a lot more work and you have to find good partners
mm-hmm.
to be able to carry that product out there. And it's that part of the business that, you know, I knew nothing about going into this, and we just wanted to make cider.
It's huge, and it's a huge part of
you know?
The business.
Oh, it's the,
I mean, there's nothing that's small, but I just heard some good advice from Phil Kelm, who's Kichigumi Cider Works, and in terms of distribution, because he has cideries around the world, and he was saying that he goes and visits, he goes to the actual warehouse where the cidery is, the distributor is, looks around, sees how they're managing the product. He doesn't just do it all over the phone. He'll actually go there and talk,
right.
And take it from there, which I thought was kind of proactive to
right.
actually go and see how it's being presented and stored, and you know how they're dealing with waste and temperatures and all that.
Yeah, I mean, good distributors are tuned in to, like, they want their suppliers to embody the same ethos that they may have, you know, and it truly is a marriage.
Yes, it is.
And, you know,
hopefully it'll be a long-term lasting one and not one conflicted and go to mediation. Right? You don't want that. That's a bummer.
So that's one of the, I mean, that's like kind of a business aspect of the cider world that, but on a more fundamental level, I mean, I wish we had just a little bit more money to start, you know, so that we, I mean, fermenting in the totes is what we had to do, but, you know, it took us a little while to get into stainless tanks, and I don't know, you just, looking back, I'm just like, wow, if we had just had, you know, $250,000 to start, that would have been, like, perfect.
Ching, ching, over here. So let's talk about the United States Association of Cider Makers. You are a board member.
So, yeah, I am on the board of directors representing the South. End of my third year is right now, this CiderCon. So I'm running again for my seat.
This year.
For another three-year term. I'm currently the vice president on the board. This year I've been the vice president. And I will, if I get reelected, I'll certainly try to remain on the executive committee for that. But on the day-to-day levels for the association, I mean, I was, I organized and chaired the committee for the hiring committee for the executive director. It was kind of apparent that we needed somebody daily on point. So Michelle's been with us for a year now, a little over a year. I worked with the Nielsen Group, some of the things I've done on the board, basically. So Nielsen, I'm the marketing person for the board, but we didn't really have a big budget. And the budget that we did carve out, I said, you know, let's get data. Like, so I basically volunteered the lion's share of the marketing budget to go towards collecting industry data, industry numbers, on sale, on-premise and off-premise sale numbers from Nielsen. So that contract kind of ate up, you know, the bulk of our budget.
And they're doing a presentation at CiderCon.
They are, and I encourage you, anyone here, to do that. UPCs, they're, you know, bring in your products, your scan data, so that we can get you in the system.
Yeah.
Because that's really, in order for us to effectively tell it, the true story of the cider industry, you have to have numbers, right? And that's what distributor, like, if you want to go to a distributor and be like, oh, well, cider's whatever, it's, you know, it's a small portion of what we do.
Sure, it's selling. Sure, yeah, it's selling. Look at it flying off the shelf.
Right.
But the UPC
you gotta
gives
have numbers.
Them a tracking.
Absolutely.
Which isn't, like, going to, like, it's not tracking in the bad sense. It's
No.
They're collecting
scan
that.
Scan data. Yep.
And you can set it in, and they'll put it in their database, and then they'll be able to see where it's selling and what the market's looking
What's
like.
Selling?
Is it, like, the more orchard-based ciders that are...
A lot of those don't even have UPCs.
They don't.
You know,
no,
they're selling
right.
off their farms. So that's right. like this segment of the industry that has no way to really...
Track.
We don't have any way to track it
Growth.
Or collect it. Outside of, like, a membership survey, which we're working on that too.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, numbers, you got to have them. I mean, every industry has to have it in order to understand trends. If you want to steer a trend, right? It's not just succumbing to a trend.
Right.
It's also pushing it the way you want it to go.
Definitely, yeah.
So I felt that that's going forward, we'll be working a lot more on those topics, as well as I think in order for us to, as an association, to basically our greatest opportunity right now is to get more members involved, more cider companies to join.
Oh, okay. Right? All right. Well, anybody out there in Ciderville who is a commercial maker right now, it is to your benefit to join the United States Association of Cider Makers, without a doubt.
It'd be, you know, right now we have about, I think, 420 cider company members in the based out of the U.S., but...
Out of how many cideries?
I think the number's up to, like, 700 and some change now.
700.
So almost 800, I think.
So there's about... 300 to almost 400 floaters out there who are actually reaping the benefits of the association's work legislatively.
Right. Correct.
And
we do a lot of legislative work.
And really,
sure.
You know, the goal of the association is to really push the cider agenda forward on the political level and to be taking a standard bearer a little bit from your cider here, but creating a standard so that there's a relationship for the consumers, the educational piece, and certainly CiderCon, which gets, it's like a dose of energy. You
it
go to some
awesome.
Conferences and you feel like, I'm gonna go home tired. Well, you're gonna go tired, but you're gonna get so
energized,
juiced.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the greatest networking opportunity for the industry, hands down. And it's great education. I mean, there's a lot of classes here. I mean, I think if we just had more people coming into the fold, then we'll have a greater voice for legislative concerns that are going to come up. They always do.
Well, we know how that works on the voting scale in the U.S.
Absolutely.
You know, you need to get your vote. Your vote will count, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so
certainly, yeah.
And then we're also working on, kind of to your point, about kind of consumer-directed cider language and knowledge for on a consumer level.
Yeah.
Is another aspect of what the USACM does, and that's trying to develop a base-level knowledge of cider for consumers and... You know, understanding that it can be a 12-ounce bottle, it can be a cork and cage fancy sparkling wine, it can be fruit, mixed fruits, you know. Understanding how it's made. I mean, I look forward to the day where everybody knows that it's fermented, you know. Like, we don't have to heat anything up.
Right. Although, the truth is, there's modern cider makers who are... doing collaborations with
absolutely
beers, and so it's no longer
if it's mixed in with grain at all, it's out of the cider spectrum,
right? But that
it's still a collaboration.
They are brewing in the sense that they are boiling cider. I'm seeing that, and you know,
hops.
But also actually boiling the cider, kind of like a different where you're freezing cider to do that, they're boiling. And so when you bring that boil factor in there, that's really kind of brewing a little bit because there's the heat factor.
It's
weird. I think it's a wiggy thing for an association such as you're part of here, because cider is all over the map. I mean, you don't have that with... You're either craft beer or you're not a craft beer.
Or you're not, yeah.
You know, you're... In wine, it's pretty darn straightforward.
Yep.
You don't say hard wine, you say wine. But in cider, there's different spellings of just the word cider in the U.S.,
right.
Never mind the rest of the world. That the nomenclature it feels to me like a bit of an obstacle of education.
It can be. See it as a...
an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Well, that's the right way to say it, but how do you jump that hurdle with the consumers who are just like, cider, what do you mean? Oh, hard cider. Or C-Y-D-E-R?
Is that made like beer, or is that... what is
the
that?
The ferment and brew thing. I mean...
Yeah.
So it's a challenge for the cider makers, but it'd be sure nice not to have that challenge. So you could just... actually put all your work towards perfecting the skill of making whatever you're doing versus baseline, this is what that spelling means or this is what that word means.
Right.
I mean, it's unique to this libation that no other libation that I know of, and I could be wrong, do correct me if I am, I'm sure people will, but seriously.
I agree. I mean, it kind of just has to be its own thing, right? Well, instead of
which is
trying
so
to,
American, right?
You know, I mean,
it's perfect.
It's like
the melting pot of cider.
You got the people that want to think about it as a beer, and then you've got the people that want to think about it as a wine. I'm like, how about we just all just agree that it's just a cider?
It's just a cider,
you know.
But it's its own little entity. You can say that, but what does that really
How does that translate to the consumer? Yeah,
or even to the cider makers,
right?
You know, it's
we're in an interesting time for alcohol in general. I mean, you've got this explosion of creativity for good and bad, right? I mean, there's a lot of bad experiments going on around the country, too. But it's like just kind of people just kind of feeling where they settle out on it, you know what I mean? For my own drinking habits in the beer world, for instance... I probably shouldn't say this out loud because I'm from Asheville, but I'm like swinging hard towards like, you know what? I just kind of want a straight ahead solid Pilsner made well.
Absolutely.
Just give me like a solid Kolsch. I want something easy that I can drink and crush, but is good. I know it's quality, well made. I don't need, you know, cinnamon toast crunch in my beer. But I understand the need for it as well.
And you're doing the same thing with your ciders.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But maybe,
you have to do both.
Yeah, I think that's really the upside of the cider piece there is that the breadth of what you could do with cider actually supersedes anything you could do in the craft beer industry. Because you could say like the Kolsch could be like
but there's crisp style guidelines with
but
beer.
But there's really extreme style guidelines and
that no one adheres to anymore.
Well, that's
in America.
True. In America. But, so that's the beauty of being an American cider maker and being part of the United States Association of Cider Makers.
Absolutely.
Is that there's not that judgment. And I think that is a novelty. It's a good feeling. If you're a creative person who is either a consumer drinking cider or a maker or in the trade, that's a nice field of people to hang out with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a unique,
wide open,
a bit,
and we, you know, I accept anything that's put on the table. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, me too.
I don't have any.
Yeah.
But there's things that I'm going to like and things that I'm not going to like.
Yeah.
And that's everyone's personal preference. I mean, sometimes in a beer, I just want a good, solid, like old school German standard beer. You know what I mean?
Which I find is very good for a palate cleanser in between ciders.
Absolutely.
If you're a little bit cider, you know, your palate needs to be cleared. Have a little taste of beer if you can. If you can't, have some kind of, I don't know what, I'd have to think about what kind of food, like endive I always kind of go to as a...
Like a bitter.
A bitter, something to just clear it up, and then you could keep on
reset.
Tasting. Reset the palate.
That's a good... That's a factor that into our tasting. We do tastings, tasting events in the tap room.
Yeah.
Where we bring in like a local baker, local cheesemaker, and then we do a range of ciders. So we've done our ciders, of course, but we've done some French ciders and Spanish ciders. Mm-hmm. It's fun to figure out what cleans your palate between courses, so to speak.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to say, going back to the cider that's been sitting in my glass for a little bit, I'm picking up, you know, this very nice...
A little tannin. Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And that it's coming out now, and I like the way it drops in my, you know, the back of my throat, and it's crisp, but it's comforting because I want to have that tannin. I didn't expect it. You surprised me there.
Well, it's not not a true bittersweet tannin with a farmhouse kind of a vibe, but it's a much more approachable. We call it our everyday cider, right? This is the one that you can just go back to. It's the standard for our baseline, right? I mean, it's
well named. Yeah, that's
brilliant. It's kind of a easy drinker. Mm-hmm. there is some bitterness there, yeah. and which we do get from some apples in our region. I mean, you do have, you it's know, the nice. Arkansas Black has more of a Perfect. More tannin quality.
Yeah.
yeah. So we obviously are using what we can to.
I know, you surprised me, man. I'm stoked to taste that. I was like, wow.
This one won a gold medal at the last year's Glint Cap for the modern dry.
Yeah. Congratulations, so. Yeah. And I could see why. And yeah. I think what I learned in my course on drinking ciders is have that first sip, let it sit in the glass a little bit.
Absolutely.
Let your palate adjust to that particular cider. Then sip a little bit. Take a gulp. You know, don't be afraid to consume it. But yeah. let it savor it a little bit, and you'll
let
be
it
surprised.
Kind of rinse your mouth out a little.
That's what happens with apples. It's so complex. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think we love to, like, geek out in it, and we're so excited to be in this world of cider. It's really exciting. Best of luck, Trevor.
Thank you.
Oh, if time only didn't fly by when you are having a good time, like I did with Trevor Baker at Noble Cider. Best of luck to the team down there and to the opening of the new tasting room in the heart of Asheville. Well, that's a wrap. And before I roll out of here, I want to remind you to sign up today for the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy, September 23rd through the 29th of this year. Go to totallycider.com. Next week, we'll be back with another episode of Cider Chat. In the meanwhile, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.